To the Romans, the Jewish focus on one single site and their insistence that only there could cultic rites be performed was bizarre, strange, superstitious, worthy of scorn. Welcome to 10-Minute Mitzvah, Episode 42, Tacitus, Cicero, and the Eternal Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Marcus Tullius Cicero was one of the most gifted and eloquent orators in Roman history. His speeches are studied and cited to this day. And one day, Cicero turned his rhetorical talents against the Jews. It came during a trial in Rome when Cicero was defending a man by the name of Lucius Valerius Flaccus. The background is given by Martin Goodman in his excellent book, Rome and Jerusalem. Quote, Cicero's much stronger verbal assault on Jews and Judaism was found in a speech delivered in 59 in defense of a political ally, Lucius Valerius Flaccus, who was on trial for corruption during his term as governor of the province of Asia. Flaccus's guilt was notorious, but Cicero owed him support in return for his assistance as urban praetor in 63, meaning BCE, when Cicero, as usual, had urgently needed help against the conspiracy of Catiline. The prosecution, led by another senator on behalf of the cities of the province, alleged that among Flaccus's misdeeds in Asia had been the theft of gold collected by the local Jews to send to Jerusalem. The confiscation itself was not denied, so Cicero's defense of his client had to rest on the assertion that Flaccus's actions had been legal, and on emotions stirred up by casting aspersions on the Jews, asserting that the jury was being intimidated by the Jewish crowd outside the court. End quote. In other words, Cicero's strategy in his quote-unquote legal defense was to speak of Jewish conspiracy and also to assault the very Jewish dedication to a faith that is centered on Jerusalem. Cicero sought to describe this faith as superstitious, as unworthy of recognition, not to mention support. Judaism, Cicero would argue, was so abhorrent that confiscation of gold that was being sent to Jerusalem was, Cicero would argue, only laudable. Cicero said as follows, quote, The next thing is that charge about the Jewish gold, and this, forsooth, is the reason why this cause is pleaded near the steps of Aurelius. It is on account of this charge, O Laelius, that this place and that mob has been selected by you. You know how numerous that crowd is, how great its unanimity, and of what weight it is in the popular assemblies. I will speak in a low voice, just so as to let the judges hear me. For men are not wanting who would be glad to excite that people against me and against every eminent man, and I will not assist them and enable them to do so more easily. End quote. Cicero, in other words, describes the Jews that were protesting in Rome the theft of Jewish funds for Jerusalem as a mob, as one with unusual connections and power. As many online noted, Cicero's statements are strikingly akin to anti-Semitic ones made many centuries later. Cicero then added, quote, As gold, under pretense of being given to the Jews, was accustomed every year to be exported out of Italy and all the provinces to Jerusalem, Flaccus issued an edict establishing a law that it should not be lawful for gold to be exported out of Asia. And who is there, O judges, who cannot honestly praise this measure? The Senate had often decided, and when I was consul, it came to a most solemn resolution that gold ought not to be exported. But to resist this barbarous superstition were an act of dignity. To despise the multitude of Jews, which at times was most unruly in the assemblies, in defense of the interests of the Republic, was an act of the greatest wisdom. End quote. Cicero, in other words, praises Flaccus for confiscating Jewish donations to Jerusalem by claiming that Judaism and the Jewish focus on one sacred city was itself superstitious. Banning the funding of superstition, he argued, could only be laudable. Cicero, in other words, was attacking the mitzvot that are our focus in today's podcast. The prohibition known as Shchutei Chutz, the biblical ban on bringing any offerings or sacrifices outside the prophetically designated central tabernacle or temple, which ultimately, of course, became Jerusalem. To the Romans, the Jewish focus on one single site and their insistence that only there could cultic rites be performed was bizarre, strange, superstitious, worthy of scorn. Yet for us, this is one of the central principles of Jewish ritual. God is to be worshipped through offerings in a single sacred site. Its oneness going hand in hand with our insistence that there is only one God to whom these offerings are being made. But for pagan Rome, this was often a source of ridicule, and Cicero utilized all of his oratorical ability in order to mock this mitzvah, this focus on Jerusalem, this lavishing of Jewish love on one location. Cicero, however, had a problem, because 4 years earlier, the Roman leader Pompey had asserted Roman authority over Jerusalem during the Hasmonean Civil War, had entered the temple, but, famously, had taken nothing, had left all the gold within to the Jews of Jerusalem. As Martin Goodman tells us, quote, "It was a serious problem for the defense that Cicero's friend Pompey had conquered Jerusalem for Rome only 4 years previously, but that he had touched nothing from that shrine. The only reason," said Cicero, "was Pompey's wise caution to avoid himself being accused of stealing," end quote. Or, as Cicero himself put it, "For I do not suppose that the religion of the Jews, our enemies, was any obstacle to that most illustrious general, but that he was hindered by his own modesty," end quote. As an historical explanation, it is preposterous, much like the rest of Cicero's argument. And yet, as Goodman adds, quote, "It is a depressing reflection of the politicization of Roman justice in the late Republic that, despite Flaccus's manifest guilt, Cicero persuaded the senatorial and equestrian jurors to acquit him," end quote. Thus, Cicero was successful in mocking the Jewish focus on Jerusalem, the Jewish singling out of the temple in Jerusalem for offerings, the Jewish lavishing of love and of philanthropic generosity on the temple in Jerusalem. But we know, ladies and gentlemen, what ultimately occurred. The Roman Republic and the Roman Empire all ultimately disappeared, are all in ruins today, while the Jewish love for Jerusalem remained century after century. The Jewish memory of the temple in Jerusalem remained century after century, a memory that spurred the Jewish return to Jerusalem and of the creation of the glorious capital of Israel that exists today. Cicero, of course, would have been shocked to learn what would ultimately occur, but if you wish to understand it, you need only have looked to another detail of Pompey's entering into the temple of Jerusalem several years before he spoke. We have this detail from a later Roman author, the historian Tacitus. Professor Simon Goldhill writes, quote, "There is a pleasingly knowing story about Pompey, the Roman general, who marched into Jerusalem in 63 BC after a three-month siege, with the bluff disregard of local sympathies that made the Romans what they were and has all too often characterized the rulers of Jerusalem. He walked straight into the Holy of Holies. This sacred space could not be entered except by the high priest, with many ritual precautions on one day of the year, the holiest of days, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. But Pompey walked straight in, we are told, to see what he no doubt expected to be a glorious statue to match the significance of the temple for the Jewish people. Romans regularly took cult statues of other cultures and transported them back to Rome in triumphant appropriation. He was amazed to find nothing there and remained baffled by the whole experience." This story is told by Tacitus, the Roman historian, but it is retold by the Jews. History is not always controlled by the victors. The contrast of the emptiness of the shrine and the practical man of war's confusion is eloquent, and for once allows the non-material its moment of assertion over the powerful realities of war and conquest. End quote. Jews declared that the ritual rites of Leviticus could only be performed in the temple, for it was there that God dwelled. God, who could not be seen, but whose presence could be felt. That is what made Jerusalem the sacred city that it was. Romans, in the age of Cicero, and later in the age of Vespasian and Titus, put their faith in idols. And as the idols crumbled, so did the far-reaching rule of Rome. Jews, through their laws, through their mitzvot, and through their memories, focused on the God of Israel who dwelled in the Holy of Holies. This people exists still, and has returned to Jerusalem in our time. This is Mayor Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.